We are almost at the halfway point of our Football 52 podcast. Welcome into another one. This is episode number 25. Head coach of the UNC Bears, Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, you made it here. Sounds like you had a very interesting trip to get back here. We all know what's going on in the news with airlines and everything, but I'm just glad to see you in front of me today. I was a little worried.
Yeah, you know, I had what I thought was a good idea that in hindsight turned into a bad idea, and that the good idea I had was just before media days on Friday. The media days are on Saturday and Sunday, but just before media days on Friday in Salt Lake City, the Big Sky officials — the Big Sky has its own association of officials — the Big Sky officials put on an annual clinic, and they do a tremendous job. I didn't go last year as head coach of UNC, but I've been before, I think almost anyone would be shocked at how much detail and rigor these officials go through, the stress that they have, the promotions and demotions based on how they test. They do physical testing at these clinics. They do mental testing, rules testing. And they get promoted and demoted every year to higher leagues, lower leagues, et cetera. And, you know, a lot of these Big Sky officials will be working in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 and eventually the NFL, those that succeed. So, you know, the idea that an official during a game would somehow, you know, favor one team or the other, it's just all you have to do is attend about 10 minutes of one of those clinics. But anyway, you know, what happened was I flew Delta because that's a common flight into Salt Lake City. So that was the flight that worked out the best. So my flight was canceled on Friday, rebooked for Saturday at 5:20 a.m. You know what kind of an early wake-up call that is, driving from Greeley to get to Denver in time. And then, you know, had a hard time even getting to Spokane, but I got there on time for media days, and we could talk a little bit more about that. And then, you know, all the other coaches and even our players gratefully got out on time. They were on other airlines, but my flight got actually pushed all the way back to Wednesday. So it was supposed to be today I was flying in. So I just went yesterday to the Spokane airport. And, you know, so I had one extra night stay in Spokane unexpectedly, and I just went to the airport, and I just, I had rebooked a flight myself to a destination that had nothing to do with my final destination, just so I could get through TSA. And I just hung out at every counter, every gate agent I could, and started asking questions. Hey, do you have any seats on this plane? Because everybody was changing their plans. Got a really good gate agent that finally hooked me up to get into Salt Lake. I had 15 minutes to get to the next plane to get to Denver, and I got in last night.
Wow. What was the airport like? Was it chaos? I mean, because you're seeing pictures online and videos online, and every airport you see just looks like it's sheer chaos.
The Delta terminal, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, people that had been there for days, you know, and then you're kind of I'm standing in line, and then, you know, with other people at each of these gates, and the lines are moving slowly. And then we start talking to each other, and you find out, you know, maybe my situation's not as bad. There's people that have been sleeping in the airports, people that are just like me. They just tried to get to any destination that maybe they thought they could get, an easier connecting flight out of that destination. It just a madhouse. But I do want to give credit to the Delta folks, because they're just like, I don't know if they're, you know, getting a lot of training right now or just kind of a team mantra, but they just grinned through the whole thing and were understanding and compassionate and really helpful. And they're putting in really long days too right now with a lot of frustrations.
How do you are you a good? I mean, you travel all the time, so that's the life of a college football coach. How do you do in those situations? Because I don't travel very much, coach. So if something were to go kind of crazy, I would be lost. I would be like in Home Alone 2, like Macaulay Culkin. I'd be running around. How do you handle those situations when you're kind of like, man, I don't really know exactly how this is going to go down and when I'm going to get to where I need to go?
I've got my processes down. You know, I guess, like you said, I'm an experienced traveler.
Yeah.
I know how to get on shuttles, and I know how to change flights and things like that. Because we, as coaches, fly so much, we usually have some type of status on some of the airlines where they, you know, you can call a little bit more helpful hotline or something like that. But I don't sleep well in hotels. I don't know if anybody does. And so when the days start to stack up like that, and most of my trips are overnight or two nights or something. When I was a young coach working at Idaho, we didn't have the budget to fly me back and forth. And so I would go for like 2 weeks at a time to Southern California. And those were really, really difficult. And in the past 10, 15 years, I haven't had a lot of 2-, 3-, 4-night stays like I did this past trip here. And they're really hard because I just don't sleep as well.
Mm. I can't imagine. I mean, I like I said, I'm looking at pictures online of everything too. And it just seems like, because you know how people can be too when they're in that situation. Maybe they've been there for a while. I would imagine emotions are running high too. So everybody's kind of maybe more difficult to deal with. But you're saying, hey, the Delta folks, given the circumstances, actually handled things pretty well.
Yeah, there were, I think, just my impression was that there was just an understanding amongst all the passengers of like, look, everybody's got problems here. I think sometimes, I've been in a lot of airports and a lot of airplanes and things like that, and there seems to always be somebody who thinks that their problems, mm-hmm. their itinerary, they're going to miss their work, whatever, their event, trumps everyone else's concerns. But I just felt like the last few days working through those Delta terminals that everybody knew that everybody's situation was messed up. And there was a little more compassion and understanding, humility.
Wow. Wow. I didn't start traveling a little bit even until I met my wife, and I just follow her around like a puppy because I get lost easily. But I'm also like the guy that's, we got to be there 8 hours before we leave, you know, they're going to leave us. So my wife's calmly sitting down eating and, you know, whatever. And I'm like, we got to get over there. And then we finally do. And we're there for like 3 hours or something. So I'm not a great traveler, coach. So
it sounds like
props
you're on
to
point.
You.
Yeah, you just keep following your wife.
That's exactly what I do. Coach, Big Sky Media Days last week. How did that go? It was great for us, too. We got a chance to talk to Preston Hadley, defensive coordinator. So that was a fun conversation, a nice switch up while you were doing the other stuff, you know, getting out to Big Sky Media Days.
I'm sure you and anyone listening immediately got a sense for who Preston is, and a ton of energy, all the time. Well-spoken, articulate. I say young coach, but he's got some good experience. Now, when I first met him, he was a young coach, I guess. And when we brought him in at BYU, he was kind of just getting started in the business, and then several years there, and now a year of DC under his belt with us. Thought I did a really good job last year of just keeping the players playing hard all year. We didn't, I've been clear about it. We failed to break through and win. And my job as a head coach is to put the whole organization together to the point where on Saturdays we come out with wins. And we didn't do that. And Preston has a share of that. I've got the lion's share of that as well. But he's a very competent, very capable, and he's a big part of what I believe this program is going to become.
Oh, he lit up. He sat in a different chair, though. He sat in the one to the right of you. And people, you know, that throws me off. I'm having to look slightly to the left rather than straight across. But his eyes lit up as he was talking, and I joked with him after the show. I was like, man, those are the best kind of interviews. You know, that's what you give me. I throw out a couple of questions, and you guys just go with it. So, again, so appreciative of every time we've had a different coach in here outside of you. We get a lot of that same passion about the game, about the process, about the plan, the players. So it was a really, really fun chat with him last week.
I always want to surround myself with great communicators, and Preston is that. And, you know, one of the things that's really difficult about being on a football staff, is that everyone has their background of expertise, and there tends to be a lot of task friction or task conflict between those people that have similar backgrounds. And so I'm a secondary coach by background, so is Preston. And when we were working together more as peers, I mean, I was the assistant head coach at BYU, but that doesn't always mean much. It's not like I'm the boss necessarily, right? And so there were a lot of times when we really had a lot of conflict, but it was always task conflict, not relationship conflict. I mean, there was just always an understanding of, hey, we're going to debate this for the good of the team, the good of the program, our own edification. We're going to learn from each other. And then, you know, when it's time to get in front of the players, we're on the same page.
Well, and that's what I think, that's got to be the perfect combination, is you want to have guys in your corner, but not yes men. And I'm sure football staffs all over, you have some of those guys. You want guys to kind of contend a bit, but also know those limits. And it seems like from it, especially based on the guys we've talked to, everybody's kind of right around that side of thinking is, hey, we can push back a little if we need to, but at the end of the day, we're going with what head coach Ed Lamb has to say.
Yeah, exactly. And I've just, you know, I've been doing it long enough now that, and maybe it just applies to every workplace, but there are people that just can't, they can't draw a line between that task conflict and that relationship conflict. And that's the only time it becomes a problem in football. There's conflict needed. This is a game where there's so many different ways to win and 10 times more ways to lose. And so things have to be discussed. They have to be vetted out. There's a lot of homework that goes into every single game plan, much less just the whole year round. And you and I have worked on this year-round planning and all that goes into it from January until now. You know, we're episode 20. You said 25.
25.
Yeah. I mean, we're to the point now, you know, what I think, you know, you can take a summer trip all around this country, road trip with Brady Hole and Ed Lamb,
yeah,
right?
You could listen to us for hours upon hours, yeah, man. And I think a lot of it's fun because not only are, you know, we get parents reaching out, we get listeners reaching out, they're just football fans. What I absolutely love, Coach, is the players are listening to this podcast. We had Ezra Ekubon on yesterday, which was a treat for me because I was a big fan of his dad when he played for the Broncos. I think he played for the Broncos for 4 years. So I had reached out to him because I think Preston and I talked, his name came up, and I said, I might reach out to him. And he said, hey, I listen to Football 52. I love that podcast. And this is a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
So for me, I absolutely love that aspect that now we're reaching out to the players, potential players, and they're listening. They're going to get a good idea what Coach, not the full idea. This is only about an hour every week, but a really good idea about your approach and how you guys handle business.
I'm so happy to hear that. I have heard some players say that they listen to it, and you know, I'm sure part of them wants to maybe see, is my name going to be talked about this week? And,
yeah,
and I think we'll do a lot more of that during the season as guys are shining and stepping up and playing roles and victories and things like that. But you know, I've always seen any chance to get in front of people or the media as a chance to share culture, share message. And I don't think it could be heard enough. I think back to when I was 19, when I was a player, all the things that were said to me over and over by coaches that I didn't hear correctly until just one random day. It was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And he's been saying that for 2 years now, you know. And so if these guys can know that there's a consistency in my approach, you know, the we talked about a few weeks ago, one of the big things we worked on this offseason, performance enhancers versus performance detractors, you know, and that just was such a big part of things. And I think it will still be a big part of things, but I think some of the drugs and alcohol are becoming a lot less of a prevalent issue with the top part of our team. So I'm looking forward to moving into some other cultural issues.
Well, in these conversations, these episodes, they actually give me a lot of ammunition for the player interviews too. I have a lot more background that I can bring up, and you will be proud of Ezra. Now he's 19, but I didn't really test him, but I threw it out. I'm like, well, what do you like to do, you know, in your spare time? This guy, he's like, I'm watching documentaries that they're telling me, that the coaching staff's telling me about. It's all sports all the time. And I said, video games, any of that stuff? And he's like, no, I thought about it, but no. And then I said, I brought up, you know, hey, Coach Lamb and this approach is talking about those unnecessary distractions. And his eyes kind of lit up a little bit. And he's like, for me, it was just like, yeah, that's who I am. I don't want to be that guy. I've never been that guy. So this, you know, really is sunk in for him quickly about what your process is. And I'm hearing more and more from that, whether it's guys that took a minute to get to it or guys that were like, no, this is what we're here to play football. We're here to take this thing seriously. So you would be proud of Ezra's interview yesterday. I think so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I look forward to listening to it.
Tell us about Big Sky Media Days. You know, obviously a great opportunity for other media outlets to talk to you guys, different coaches throughout the conference. Any big bullet points stick out in your mind as far as how that went? Because sometimes we learn new things, too, about the conference as a whole. And I'll ask you a couple of those things coming up.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just start from a personal perspective. It's great to see the other coaches, guys that I've known in many cases since I started coaching, you know, 20, 25, 26 years ago. So I see other coaches, and we've, of course, been different roles, different universities as we've come up through the business. And it's great to see those guys, but it's still a professional environment, and we've got our players there as well. And we've got all the media, so there's a job to be done. As I was just alluding to, I've always seen the chance to talk to media as a chance to get messages out to people who care, players, parents, fans, anybody that is paying attention. And in the case of Big Sky Media Days, there's also some national media outlets that have they've got some impact on rankings and things like that. And, mm-hmm. and of course, you know, last year that wasn't a part of our process. But as we get this program really rolling, it's going to be important whether we're, you know, as we climb the rankings, whether we're, you know, 24th or 12th in the national rankings. And a lot of that has to do with just where the public sees your program. There's a media poll, a national media poll. There's a coaches poll. Those things come into play. And even the computer rankings take the poll, you know, they take the polls into play for some of their initial strength of schedule and stuff like that. So I really love those opportunities to get out. I love the two guys that we brought. There are many worthy guys that we could have brought, Ezra being one of them. Dozens of others. The program's getting to that point, and I'm so excited about it. But Sam Youngi, Amitua Nai, and Hunter Green did an outstanding job, represented us very well. And even though they were, the two most qualified candidates to go and represent us, and they've both had tremendous careers and off seasons, and I'm sure all of their teammates were proud of them. I also really liked that with an 0-11 record last year, we sent a punter and a D tackle amongst all the quarterbacks and running backs and kind of glamour position guys. I really like how we're flying under the radar right now, and I wanted to keep it that way. And so, you know, a lot of those other players were like, Hunter's, you know, he's a big, strong guy. He's really worked at it, put on 20 pounds of muscle. So a lot of the other players are like, oh, what position are you? Oh, punter. Oh, geez, UNC sent their punter? They must be garbage. So I really enjoyed that dynamic.
Well, and you're also sending, you know, as you said, there's a lot of guys that are good, great representation of your school. But punter, whatever, everything you've told us and everything we've learned about him is that he is one of those guys you want representing. And that doesn't matter if you're a punter, if you're a backup punter, even. You want to get those guys that represent your school in a big way.
Absolutely. And his impact on a game, you know, I say punter because I'm still trying to have him fly under the radar. But remember, like, this is a guy that kicks it out of the end zone into the wind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tremendous advantage in every football game to not really have to worry about giving up kickoff return yardage. We work hard at it. We're ready if a kick is ever returned on us, but that's a real advantage for us in games. Teams that try to bring it out of the end zone on us, they tend to be tackled inside the 25-yard line, give us great starting field position. He was also 9 of 12 on field goals last year, and that's a really, really good 750 hit percentage. And so he's a weapon in a lot of different areas, makes a big impact on the game.
Well, what better way? We always hear that, you know, special teams is underrated, but coaches will always say, no, we overrate that. What better way to say that than to bring your punter to Big Sky Media Days?
Yeah, yeah. And we should say, you know, but let's keep him under the radar. But we should be saying punter, kicker, you know, punter, place kicker, and, you know, kickoff guy. He's doing it all. And a lot like Sam. So Sam's no D tackle is going to rack up a bunch of stats. You can have a great game as a D tackle and have zero stats. Sam's got some stats from last year and all that, and he played a big role for us, but we rotate quite a bit on the D-line. Our players know the impact that Sam has on our team, but again, a chance to really fly under the radar.
Well, and D-tackles, I mean, we always talk about selfless positions in football. We've discussed the offensive line at great length, but yeah, D-tackle, you might not register a stat for weeks, but you register the real stats. You're allowing everybody around you to register those while you're just getting beat up and consuming a lot of blocks.
Yeah. One of the breakthrough moments for Sam, he transferred to us from a lower division and came in and really worked hard, put on a lot of weight, went from about 260 to 300 where we needed him. And then at Cal Poly, I don't know if you remember that game, but we opened up really well, moved the ball up and down the field, and had a 7-point lead. I think it was early in the second quarter. were getting stops on defense, and we forced a punt deep from Cal Poly territory. And Sam made the sack on third down that turned it into a fourth and extra long. I can't remember what it was. Let's say fourth and 17. It's the off for some reason that's in my mind. And Cal Poly punts it, and here we are going to get good field position, going to potentially go up by two scores at Cal Poly and get what would have been our first win of the year. And we muffed the punt and give them the ball deep in our territory, and they ended up, you know, tying up the game, and it turned into a dogfight from there. And we, in the end, we lost a one score game. But Sam's moment there, when you lose, it's not as big of a moment. But that was a huge sack that he got. And I think when we can get to the point where we're winning more games, we're putting more pressure on people, they're dropping back to pass more because we have more leads, you're going to see Sam get a lot more of those stats.
Coach, on the you mentioned the under-the-radar thing. So I'm guessing it didn't bother you at all when you look at the rankings. You know, we've talked about that on the whole show earlier this week. I mentioned it with Ezra, and he's like, yeah, we don't look at that. We were 0-11 last year. We have a lot of new faces. I'll ask you about the roster updates, too. It probably doesn't really register. It didn't register with me more so than any year, because I'm looking at, and I've gotten to know you and this roster a lot more. People are judging this team based off of a lot of things last year, and there are some pretty significant changes that you guys have done and made to this roster.
There are. Yeah, there certainly are some big changes and still being made, to be honest with you. We've got, you know, the scholarship players are obviously they're settled in. We signed them a long time ago, and we're not a big transfer. We don't bring in a lot of transfers, only as necessary or when needed. So those are all set, but you know, I think there's a few reasons why our online roster isn't up to date at this point in the season. We're still working on who our 120 are going to be. So we have 85 scholarship or almost 85 scholarship guys on the team, but there's 120 total on the team, and so that's a lot of moving pieces, because these walk-ons, you have to recruit them really all the way up to training camp, because they, you know, especially the first year guys that aren't with us as returners, they're guys that could get a better opportunity somewhere else at the last minute. And so and then our sports information staff is, you know, we lost Dennis Driscoll to a different opportunity, and so Michael High has taken care of all he can. He was more of our basketball and some other sports guys last year, and now he's, yeah, I think he's holding the whole weight of the department right now. So, you know, and then our compliance team is still working through getting some guys actually on the roster. So that roster will be set when training camp happens, and I think at that point the online roster will be accurate.
Well, I was going to ask, too, if there was any gamesmanship to that, too. Maybe you don't want everybody staring at that roster for several weeks leading up to camp.
No, not strategically, but now that you mention it. So here's a fair point. It's not something that's on my radar at all. Like all the things that I've got going on, all the things that I think are important to the program. Now, you know, you kind of asked the question, and then I'm sitting here wondering, man, I wonder if we've got some parents who are just kind of like, hey, I'm proud of my son to be on the UNC team. How come his name's not on the roster, name and picture, et cetera? And okay, that part I'm saying, yeah, okay, that is more important than I'm giving it credit for. But remember, we've still got, you know, 30 players, new players that we've got to take mugshots of to even get the roster completely built. And we can't take those mugshots in the summer, right? That's the summer's for training, and then we take the mugshots when everybody gets to camp. We have players that'll be on the team in a week during training camp that have yet to step foot on this campus except for a visit, you know, one single visit. So we are a little bit aways from being able to put together what I would call a complete 2024 team roster.
Coach, when does practice start up for you guys? It's the 24th day of July. What are we looking for here?
31st, exactly 1 month.
I know you've
before
said it before, but
game.
I have to ask it again.
Yeah, 1 month before our first game. That's you know, it's pretty standard. The NCAA sets the first date of possible practice, and you know, every coach is going to try to do that. We may not all take advantage of every possible practice. I know there are some coaches that, you know, are looking to do team building things during training camp and stuff like that. We're gonna take all 25 of our allowable practices in those 31 days. But you know, where most coaches will just go with the 31-day calendar and start the first day possible.
Will this be open to public? Can the public come out, and check you guys out?
Yeah, all of our practices are open to the public. I do several times during practice where there's just like, you know, as a head coach, I need to be around. I need to be visible. But I don't want to be too much on stepping into the realm. Coaches get a little nervous when I'm watching their individual drills and things like that. And some of that's good, but like I can't be at the same drill all the time. That coach is like, man, do you trust me or not? I got 10 minutes with my guys before we go back to team. And Coach Lamb's always there listening and chiming in. So there are some times in practice where I make it a habit to look around and see who's watching practice and go and introduce myself if necessary or say hi to the people I know. So we've got a pretty good handle. Like, you know, at a place like BYU where I worked last, an open practice would have thousands of people at it. And we had occasional open practices, but most of them obviously were closed. Here, open practices right now are just not a problem. If it becomes a problem, we might have to change.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you want it to be? Would you? I mean, obviously, you want it to become a problem because that means there's a lot more people taking interest in your program. But getting more and more people surrounding the practice field would kind of be cool for the players. But then, like you said, you got to start evaluating that as we go here.
Right. Yeah. What's beneficial and what's not? Obviously, thousands of people at a practice on a consistent basis can be a problem. There could be even a scouting issue. You know, like we had to be concerned about when at a place like BYU, you've got University of Utah and their fans that they might be living down the block.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they come to practice and then all of a sudden they're putting stuff on message boards or whatever, or even have a contact with the coaches at Utah. You know, I'm going into some areas there that are probably wild speculation. And, most coaches aren't going to want to hear from fans about what they saw at a practice. But the reality is that, like, okay, in the best interest of our team, we have an open practice today. Do we want to kind of shut down some of like if we've got a double reverse pass in, is that something that you show in an open practice? No, that's going to get back. And so there are some thought processes that go into open practices. For us right now, anyone who's interested in coming out and being supportive or interested in what we're doing, we're there for you.
Well, I'm gonna plan to be there, Coach. Yeah. Can we say times out loud here? What times are we going?
I don't have that schedule in front of me, the daily itinerary, and it also is a flex schedule. So based on weather, like you know, I believe that our practices are 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is prime thunderstorm time in Greeley in August. So we actually have an alternate schedule where, if it's looking like we're going to get that lightning storm during that, you know, 2 to 4 hour, we can kick back practice back to 7. And so it's really an unpredictable schedule other than to say 2 o'clock when there's no thunderstorms at 2 o'clock, 7 o'clock if there are thunderstorms at 2 o'clock. And generally, as you know, the thunderstorms are, you know, they're 1 hour events for the most part and they clear up.
All right. So you got to give me some patience because my show gets over at 2. So as soon as I get done with that, I'm going to bust over next week because I want to see the guys in action and, of course, get some pictures and things like that, all within the, you know, what I'm supposed to do. You know, I'm not going to be giving anything away. Yeah. I will definitely post something, though, where there are players out here. You know, that or something like that. Nothing breaking.
Well, no, I mean, you're kind of minimizing it. That's huge for our guys.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our sports, information staff. And because of UNC being the type of place that it is, a lot of times those are student workers that kind of come and go. David Cebulczyk is the consistent one in charge of that. But a guy like Dennis Driscoll, he was here. Now he's gone. We've got, you know, guys like Blake Olson.
Blake does a great job.
He does a great job. And that content is just cherished by our players. And Laura Richardson has been, she's just, one of the citizens of Greeley and a neighbor of mine, a friend of our family. And she comes out and puts a lot of content up for the players. And she's doing more of the life content where, you know, guys in between plays or whatever, they're sharing a water bottle or putting on their cleats. I mean, for the players, really, it's not like when I played, you know, where you had to, like, we actually had to go to the BYU archives, the photographer, he would have a manila folder with printouts of any pictures that he took of you. And we would go like once or twice a year, hey, what kind of pictures do you have of me, man? Mm-hmm. And obviously it's not like that anymore. These guys, there's content all over the place, especially of them playing. So some of these things that Blake and Laura do where it's like interview-based or it's kind of on the sideline-based, it's the moments in the transitions from the weight room to the practice field, those are really cherished by our players.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing. I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of fans that are interested too, because I think this podcast, I've heard from a lot more people than I'm used to hearing from, you know, on my daily show, whatever, but people are really into this. This will be a fun opportunity for some of those people, if they're in the area, to come out and just take in some practice. And I think there's going to be people from time to time coming out there to watch this. So that's going to be really fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I say, anybody right now who's interested in UNC, I mean, I would rather keep practices open. Like, let's say the Colorado State Week, you know, I mean, they're going to have, if my paranoid self says, are they going to have somebody here checking out our trick plays? I would rather put in some bogus trick plays and have them worried about stuff that we're not going to do than close down practice. Like at this point for our program, we welcome all the support that we can get. And if somebody out there kind of believes in what we're doing and the direction that we're going, that's somebody with foresight, that's somebody that's paying attention, that's somebody who's on our side, and we want to welcome them with open arms.
Coach, I want to, if we can talk about this. Now, this is an article from spokesman.com, and actually a listener of the program sent this to me. So I was reading through it last night, and I mean, there's a lot of quotes here. I'm not familiar with this publication, but we have quotes in there from the Big Sky League, the Big Sky Commissioner, Tom Wisterstrill.
Wisterstrill,
yeah, pretty close. yeah, about 80% there. Yeah. I was close.
Tom. Commissioner Tom.
We're going to go Tom. Yeah. Now, he talked about a lot of different things. One of those things was obviously the Big Sky's contract with ESPN. ESPN Plus, we know your games will be available on ESPN Plus again. He talked about in 2025. The idea that, hey, there's going to be some regular season games scheduled there on Friday nights. Can you talk to us about that? Have there been a lot of those open discussions about that very thing on Friday night for Friday Night Football for the Big Sky?
Sure. I think one of the coaches at the media days pointed to Boise State as a school that had actually lost attendance because they had so many games on so many different nights. I mean, Boise over the last several years since they became more of a national brand, you know, ESPN or whatever broadcast partner, they were putting them on whatever night they could to get Boise State on, and Boise State was agreeing and saying, hey, let's do it. And I had actually, because we played Boise State every year at BYU, and BYU was in the same situation as an independent, you know, national brand, people want to watch, there's good eyeballs to be had for those television stations, but how do Boise State and BYU stack up against, you know, on Saturday primetime, stack up against a Notre Dame or Michigan or USC or whatever? Mm-hmm. Not as well. And so we ended up playing a lot of games on Thursday, Friday. Boise State was even doing them on Tuesday, Wednesday. I know they had one 4 a.m. wake-up call last year for a 9 a.m. game, you know, to get their players up on time and eating the pregame meal and stuff. So it can hurt. And my point is, if we're playing some Friday games in the Big Sky, it's going to be because it's like on ESPN2, not ESPN+. And I think there are some programs in our conference that have proven over the years that they can draw a lot of eyeballs. And those will probably be the teams that are playing more often on those ESPN2s right now. And I would like our program to get to that point where we're drawing more eyes because we're nationally relevant and in the playoff hunt, and UNC versus Montana or Montana State is a marquee game that has national implications.
Well, and that's the goal. That's the dream, right?
Yep.
And obviously, though, you say Friday night, so I have to ask about the light situation.
Right.
We've discussed it over the years. At one point, it felt like maybe a couple years ago there was some momentum going there. And I don't know what the real answer is, because some people will tell you, well, it's the neighborhood surrounding the field and they've had a hard time with it, or funds or whatever. So we have you in here, Coach. Is that a reality for this program to eventually get some lights out there?
I'm going to talk in super general terms because I think the best person to talk to about this is Darren Dunn because he's been here a lot longer than me. But here's what even with Darren, me, president, whoever somebody would point to and say, hey, well, you know, when or why or how are we going to get lights? Okay, for me as the coach, starting with me, there is no competitive advantage to having lights. Both teams have to play under the sun. Both teams would have to play under the lights. Both teams have to play on any field. You hear people all the time, we'll play in a cornfield. You know, I guess here in Greeley, it's going to be we'll play in a pasture. And that is so that to me, like for every dollar that's coming in that I have something to say about, it's probably going to go towards steak. Like we need, our players need just, you know, more protein, more support in the dining hall. That tends to be where we really stretch our budget is with the food at home and food on the road travel budget. So, however, you know, I do think that we would get bigger crowds if we had Friday night games. I know even personally, I know a lot of, you know, families of kids in the 12 to, you know, 15 range, they've got their own games on Saturday during our games. And so those kids that maybe would love to come see a college football game can't actually make it work with their own youth football schedule. And so just that subsegment right there of the population that would be at the games, we're missing out not having lights on Friday. But I can't say, I don't know the math. I don't know the lights would have paid for themselves over the last 50 years. But I, you know, at the same time, like, you know, I'm not dumb and I'm not just going to be a yes man. Like just about every high school in the state has lights. You know, the UNC's got a beautiful campus with a lot of buildings and a lot of infrastructure projects. Why lights in the stadium hasn't been something that, you know, was put in the past. I can't answer that, but Darren Dunn could, and he can talk to you about current, whether it's fundraising or you know, capital campaign projects. I'm not going to get into the president's business and decide, you know, which college or which capital campaign project is more important right now. I can tell you this from a recruiting standpoint. I've never had a player say, you know, do you guys have lights? Do you play your games at night or during the day? That's never come up.
Well, and again, I've never had real clarity, and I probably should do some, you know, detective work at some point, Coach. And that's just not that's not what I do on a daily basis. But you just hear the rumors that it's a neighborhood thing, that the neighborhood has been around there, has you know, it's the noise or whatever Friday. I'm not sure, but I imagine, like you said, with the high schools, I mean, I live in Timnath. There's Timnath High School there. They got their lights. My mother and father-in-law live right by that place, and they're like, yeah, you hear the band a little bit once in a while, but it's not really that crazy of a situation. So I don't know how real that is. Maybe that's something I'll figure out. I'm actually meeting with Darren Dunn pretty soon, so maybe I can figure some of that out too. Because it just depends on who you talk to. There's always a different reason as to why that maybe hasn't happened just yet.
You know, I think you get a lot of clicks when you go over into that neighborhood. It's this time of year, people are out doing a lot of yard work. I think you walk around that neighborhood with your headset, your microphone, and start asking questions. You know, if people are going to have objections, let's have them put their face behind that objection. I'm joking there.
Can I bring one of your players with me just in case they're bigger than me? Could I, you know, rent one or something like that? Does that work?
That's a very...
It's an NIL deal.
That's a very, you know, Alice Acres is a very old, established neighborhood. And it's getting pricey to live in there. Beautiful neighborhood. They've got acreage properties. I don't think you're going to see, you know, a lot of people who are going to want to like kind of beat you up and shoo you out of there. But they may have, you know, they may have firearms.
The closest thing I've ever gotten to that kind, because again, mine's an opinionated radio show. I do interviews like this. But when I was starting out in the business, I worked at a newspaper in Berthoud, and they were putting a roundabout by Main Street. And I was tasked, like first week on the job, you have to go around and interview all these business owners. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really fun. They're all furious because they don't want construction all summer on a roundabout in Main Street that's going to kill their businesses. So I'm going in like, hey, what do you think of this new roundabout thing, right? Oh, some of them wouldn't talk to me. Some of them were terrible. So I'll have to reach back to those days and bring it out, but I'll at least be ready for something.
You're experienced.
Yeah, I think so. Although that led me away from the newspaper industry that week. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to stick with radio. That's what I know. Well, I do appreciate you going there with us a little bit because that is something that, you know, for several years, people bring it up. A lot of people that are rational, that are logical, do kind of understand what goes into that, especially if it is a neighborhood situation and where you're directing the money. Like you said, I gotta feed the players. I gotta make sure my players at the end of the day can play on Saturdays first. You know, we gotta make sure that that's all ready to go. And then hopefully we keep growing this thing, and then that's the next step.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if somebody wanted to come in and provide lights for us, that gives us a lot of options. Even playoff bids, the opportunity to have a playoff game at home.
Yeah, yeah.
We ran into some of that at Southern Utah where our facility wasn't up to par. We won the only time in history of the Big Sky. At Southern Utah, we won the Big Sky outright and went on the road for our first playoff game.
Yeah.
And that's the FCS committee at that time, they still do. It's not like the FBS. They take all things into consideration. I mean, how close is the nearest full service hotel? And then, so if you're a team like that's out in the boonies, that doesn't have lights, you didn't put a big bid in for your playoff game, you're going to end up playing on the road. So there are definite advantages to having lights. But just right now in the near term, which, is kind of the way I'm choosing to answer this question, it's just not part of my daily thought process. We can win games with the day games. And the players actually prefer – players love to have fans there, and so there's a juxtaposition here with the statement I'm going to make. But players love day games because you don't have to wait around all day. There's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of butterflies. There's a lot of nerves. There's a lot of excitement on Saturdays. Waking up on Saturday and watching college football all day and waiting for your opportunity to come at 7 o'clock at night is pretty difficult. It's not like being in high school, going to class all day and then starting to dress for the night game. It's tough to sit around all day.
Yeah. I always think about this for, like high school, they're typically playing on Friday nights, then Thursday nights. But then the playoffs are Saturdays, they're during the day. And I always thought that was weird. It's like you get used to Friday night. You're playing at night all the time. That's what you know. And that's the timing of when you're going to play. And then suddenly the playoffs hit and you're playing at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. So I get it. I know there's reasons for it, but I always thought it was strange. Like you play your regular season one way and then everything changes, especially for young athletes. That could be a big obstacle to get over.
I think I had probably the best or worst training you could have in being at BYU for so long, because we would have, because of the eyeballs. Like I remember once we played Washington in a Pac-12 after dark game, didn't get back until 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And then we turned around and played Utah State on a Thursday, and they were coming off of a bye. So we had really almost zero preparation by the time getting to Tuesday is kind of where you start practicing, but Tuesday is almost time to taper down on a Thursday game.
Yeah.
And we got beat badly that year by Utah State, and I don't want to take any credit away. It was a really good Utah State team, but we were just completely unprepared in part because of the rigor of that schedule. So changing times, places, long road trips, that can be incredibly difficult on a team. It'd be interesting to see how Stanford and Cal, some of these West Coast teams, are doing in the ACC, traveling coast to coast.
That stuff is wild.
I've lived that, and it's a real challenge. We had to reach out to NFL teams who kind of were more used to doing it, but they also, NFL teams have their own plane with all first class seats. So there's a major difference between, traveling as a NFL team and a college football team.
Coach, we don't have to really get into too much on this one, also Big Sky Commissioner Tom Wisterstrill. Tom, we're just going to say
yeah.
Tom. There we go.
Tom
again, Commissioner Tom. He weighed in a little bit about what we're seeing with the NCAA, the court stuff going on in the NCAA about eventually back paying for all the name, image, and likeness stuff that was missed over the years. I wasn't under the understanding that this was going to be on the FCS too, that FCS teams were going to be asked to pay some of this as well. It seems interesting to me if that's the case.
Yeah, I think at this point it's really speculation by Tom.
Okay.
And probably intelligent of him to be out in front of it, because it could. I mean, to say that there have been no FCS players that were impacted by the ability to or the inability to benefit off of their own name, image, or likeness, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's out in front of it. And yet, I think the other piece of that is kind of the revenue sharing, which may or may not. I don't know how much they'll combine this kind of future and past revenue sharing impetus, but like let's be clear, there are no FCS teams that make revenue. There are very few FBS teams that make revenue. We're even you know, just because they're a close example. I don't mean this in negative, like if when I say Colorado State, but there's sure. nobody in the Mountain West that's actually making revenue. They're spending either what they're making or spending more. There are tremendous institutional resources that are going to support these football program entities, and it's not it's not like the university is making money off of these players. And so players, at some point they need to understand that, because so much of the media attention is based around what Ohio State and Alabama are doing and USC. It's like, no, that's a different animal there. Now, the revenue that they're bringing in is a lot different than the revenue that UNC is bringing in.
Well, I'm glad you could go there with us, too. And again, I don't know. I haven't heard of this publication before, spokesman.com. But some of the quotes were very eye-opening, I suppose. And like you said, maybe some of this is still speculation at this point of ultimately where this is all going to go. But it's just part of the college world that we live in. We're constantly having these kind of conversations. We got to get into at some point, we always, it seems like every show, Coach, and this is my favorite part of the show, is when we get into some kind of philosophical term or idea or view from you of how to approach life, how to approach football. And I want to get into this, talking to your guys about the difference between humility and confidence. So take us on that journey for a moment, if you could.
I appreciate that. Yeah, this is one of the things I intend to kind of introduce to the guys for early in training camp, and not something we talked about a lot this past offseason with the party culture and the dedication to football being a first priority through the offseason. But there's no question that we only had four seniors last year. I'm not in the business as a football coach of getting rid of all the guys and bringing in all new guys. We're going to have a bunch of guys on the field at all times this year who suffered through an 0-11 season. So I think for us, one strength of that, certainly for me, is humility. And one of the things that gets kind of misunderstood a lot is by all athletes is the word humility, the concept of humility. Humility doesn't have anything to do with confidence. In fact, I think there's an inverse relationship. You talk about humility. The way I'm going to define humility, and I got to give the writer Adam Grant. He's kind of an organizational behaviorist scientist. I've been doing a lot of reading of his books, and he hasn't written a book specifically about the concept, but he goes into it quite often in some of his different books, where he talks about humility just being the realization that all humans are fallible. And that the, kind of the human condition of when things are going well, we tend to kind of lose some of our intent, some of our focus, and maybe become overconfident. Mm-hmm. And that's where really I think, when you have a lack of humility, that's when overconfidence comes into play. I like to think about that. This isn't Adam Grant. This is just more my thinking. But there was a time when I was reading just kind of a small, I can't even remember because it was so many years ago, but a small passage about the preparation that an assassin puts into their work. And you think about an assassin, you think about calm, cool, collected, prepared, trained. But these are people, like, they don't just walk down the street and hope. Mm-hmm. Like there is every single detail is pre-planned. And the physical and mental focus and logistical focus that an assassin would have. I'm just realizing here with the recent assassination attempt, this is like really poor timing for me to be like kind of glorifying an assassin. So let's go sniper. Let's go the sniper who takes out an assassin.
Yeah. Yeah, we get where you're going.
Yeah. So a sniper, same thing, like, the attention to detail, the mental and physical preparation, but total confidence. I think when anybody thinks of like these highly trained warriors like a sniper, there's so much that goes into that. And that's really how I want our team to operate, is that you leave no stone unturned. You are constantly looking at what could go wrong and addressing that beforehand. That to me is humility and confidence at the same time, because confidence to me is knowing what the obstacles are, or knowing that they are going to occur, and being prepared to overcome them. And so I just want to really talk to our team about that. And gosh, I gotta train myself not to bring up the assassin thing. It's just the timing isn't right.
No, but I mean, come on. If logical people that listen in, I mean, we all like we see the movies, we see all that stuff, we read the books. We get where you're going. And if people take that too far, then that's crazy talk from them. But it's clearly picking up with your guys, because Ezra Ekubon on yesterday talked about how I could make a big play. Anybody could make a big play. And they do it 90% right. Everything they did was 90% there. They get the sack, great. But what you and your staff come in, and Ezra was really talking this up, was like, they're going to, yeah, good job. Here's the 10% though. Here's where, man, if you go up against a stud, like a real stud, All-American left tackle, that's not going to work. This 10% that you missed messed up. So clearly something is resonating with these guys. So again, if people can separate their minds from what's happening in the world, those details, the analogy you're making makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, we probably could go. It would be a little safer of me to go to a firefighter or something. You know, somebody, anyone that really has a lot on the line, basically their life on the line in the line of duty. You see just tremendous levels of preparation and detail. If you've ever been to a fire station, which I've toured those before, or a police station, the amount of detail they have just in taking care of their equipment. I have two brothers that were Marines and have talked to them about their experience in the Marines. The dedication to detail is just unbelievable what those guys go through. And as a football program, you're really not going to get there just by preaching it. Because we don't control these guys, they have a lot more decisions that they can make as opposed to a firefighter or somebody that's it's their actual job. Student athlete is kind of a pseudo job. A big part of mine is motivating them to stick to the details. That's a big part of my job, and I'll continue to do that and take that on and realize that it is. But if we can get to that point where we feel like our very lives are on the line, or at least our football lives, our livelihood as winners is on the line, and we can bring that kind of attention to detail, then I think that to me is confidence. Not walking around or wonder, not beating our chest about how many preseason all-conference players we have. Let's get to the point where it's postseason all-conference. And that's why, in my case, I have no concerns about where we're picked by the media, the coaches, to finish as a team. The fact that we don't have a bunch of all-conference players, that is just not even on my radar. I hope that's not on our players' radar. At 0-11, we should expect nothing more than that. Let's look at the postseason. That's where our focus is.
Well, and for me, honestly, even when you're talking proven guys and you have the preseason honors come out, I guess the rankings are one thing to talk about, but I never spend a lot of time on my show talking about preseason rankings. I already know the guy's good, or we already kind of know if he's good or not. It's up to you throughout the regular season to either live up to those expectations or prove everybody wrong. So we get caught up in it. You see it all over social media. So-and-so's got a preseason. I mean, you haven't played a game yet. So I'm with you. I look at, hey, I would ignore that one more than anything in media coverage ever, because it's all about what happens at the end of the season.
I'm one of the voters on the AFCA coaches poll this year. It's just a rotational. It's not something to be proud of. It's just rotational amongst the coaches in our league. There's two coaches every year that rotate onto that AFCA coaches poll. And I can tell you that my first several polls, there's not going to be a whole lot of concern about whether I'm getting it right. I'm gonna do my best. It's my job to promote teams in our conference and teams around the country that are doing well. But who's doing well right now? I mean, I have no idea. I guess we just go by how everybody finished last year.
Yeah,
is the initial way to do that, and it'll be like that for some time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can look at the record last year, but how deep are people really going into? Well, they've got, and coaches, I know you guys will get deeper into that, but how much are you doing that right now? Well, they got to replace this guy, they're replacing that, because you're still focusing on your guys. You're still trying to figure out exactly what your depth chart's going to look like. So I always, even the writers getting those. I'm paying attention to UNC right now. I am not doing a deep dive just yet on Montana State or Montana. I couldn't name 10 of their starters right now. So that, locally, I could name 10 starters on every team throughout Northern Colorado and up in Wyoming. But if I'm going to be asked to vote, which I have before, I think it's interesting to me because you want me to vote, and all I'm talking is UNC. I don't know how good Weber State's going to be. I have no idea. Now I'm gonna, if I do want to vote and take this really seriously, I got to spend 30 minutes to an hour here busting into all things Weber State. Then I got to go Montana State. So I've never taken those things too seriously. And that's not like a pass or whatever, but it's just, it is what it is. It's always been fun.
That's one good resource is the computer rankings, because you say you don't know how good a team's going to be, and there's validity in that. But really, it's hard to know how good are the teams they're playing. And so that's where some of the computer rankings come into play. Like Sagarin and Massey both had us last year, even at 0-11 in the 60s, which is in the top half of the country. You know, anybody that wants to say UNC was the worst team in the country last year, 0-11, I'm not going to argue with them, right? And I'm not bringing this up for some kind of validation. It's just, in the sport of football, because there are so few games, your sample is so small. There's a major difference between playing a fairly weak schedule versus a really strong schedule. And we at UNC are always going to play a strong schedule. We're in the best team. We're in the best conference in America at the FCS level, top to bottom. And we're really proud to be in that conference. And our aspiration is not to jump to a conference that's easier for us to start to establish wins and confidence. We want to do it right here in the Big Sky. I told our players as we were sitting, you sit in the media days at the Big Sky, and this the media, the local media, the national media, the Big Sky footprint media, they're moving around to different tables asking questions. And obviously UNC, I mean, we got plenty of interviews, but less than a lot of the other schools, right? There's less interest in talking to UNC right now than there are the other schools. But I was telling our players, there's a major difference between some of these schools, and I started pointing at their banners and their players and their coaches where they're sitting. Those schools being successful in the Big Sky and us doing it. And, you know, in the case of Hunter Green, who turned down an NIL opportunity, was approached by a representative of a school, let's call it that way. I don't want to get any coaches in trouble, but a representative of the school, to go to a big-time place and instead said, no, I'm staying right here. You know, that right there, that's a guy who's trying to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish. As coaches, we all have a ton of opportunities every year to leave. All of our players now with the portal have opportunities to leave. Guys can go make more money, coaches and players both. What I'm interested in is who's trying to do something special at UNC. And make no mistake, UNC winning a championship is nothing like Montana winning a championship. Those are two totally different accomplishments, and UNC's accomplishment to win a Big Sky championship is light years more impressive and a bigger challenge than doing it at Montana.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And what's awesome, though, Coach, is on air and off the air, when I visited with a handful of players these last couple of months, thanks to this podcast, and kind of just going, okay, this guy seems interesting. I want to talk to this guy. And on the air, off the air, it's the same stuff. It's, hey, we believe in this. We are, I mean, Van Cheele, one of his quotes, I don't have it directly, but it was like, we work. We are working. Yeah. You know, that is what we're doing. We are not partying. We are not messing around. We are going to work. And I was getting goosebumps just listening to that. So when you hear that kind of transition from you to the players and they have that same mindset, they almost roll their eyes when I ask, like, what do you think of coach pushing, you know, hey, let's not go out and get it too crazy. I know you're college kids, but you're football players. They're like, that's what we want. We want to be workers. That's what we want to be known as when we're done, when it's all said and done from here. So that's got to be cool for you.
The biggest, most physical team in the Big Sky, that's where it starts, you know, and wins have to come through skill and making plays during the game and all of that. But our path at UNC is the biggest, most physical team in the conference. It's not to recruit the most dynamic talent. We're just, you know, guys with a lot of talent that have established that talent. They're generally not choosing UNC. No matter how wide of a net we cast, no matter how hard we recruit, they're going to have a lot of options. And guys at UNC need to have kind of a chip on their shoulder. I make it clear all the time, this is my very best opportunity to be a head football coach at UNC right now. This is what I want. This is what I'm here for. I'm looking for guys that are in the same boat. If you're going to walk around here and act like you've got all kinds of opportunities to be here or there, you should be here or there, or not here. You should be there, right? Yeah. this is a place where when we break through, when we win, it's going to be because we're bigger, it's because we're stronger, it's because we're more physical, and then we find a way to develop those skills to actually make the plays.
Well, we're getting closer, Coach. About a month away from that first game of the season against Incarnate Word on August 31st. Cannot wait to see what you guys do to get this team in action. It's been so fun. I can't believe we're almost there. And we're almost halfway through. Next week will be our halfway point, right, for the Football 52 podcast.
Halfway point. I really need to get the road trip down. How much of a road trip? That's what I'm starting to measure it on because I've been doing a lot of driving.
How many hours?
A couple different trips. Like, what type of road trip can you make with Ed Lamb and Brady with Football 52 as your only companion? I think that's right now. You got a pretty good road trip. If we could set the destinations, you know, start in Greeley. Where's the next stop? What are you going to see? How much of America are you going to see? And we could almost dedicate dedicate each episode to a new hour destination.
Well, if you're going on a flight, you might need a few more of the hours too, because you'll be stuck in the airport for a while.
Oh man, yeah. CrowdStrike software strikes again.
We go full circle here, Coach. Always love this show. This has been such a fun thing. And next week we'll get to our halfway point. Next week, fall camp, all that stuff starting up. I'm excited to pop out there and see you guys in action. So I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Thanks, Brady.
All right. Another episode of Football 52 in the books. We'll be at the halfway point next week. Thanks for listening.